Hi there, and welcome back to Lisa and Phil Ruin the Movies with me, your hostess, Lisa Schmeiser.
Hi, I'm Philip Michaels. I died 4 months ago, which was the last time we recorded.
Three.
Oh, no.
We felt like you died 4 months ago. We made it legit 3 months ago.
I died in the middle of the last recording. That's why we haven't recorded. It's taken us that long to reanimate me.
I sent him to see King Arthur. He hasn't recovered yet. Anyway, we're thrilled to be back. We apologize for the infrequency. This is what happens when you have 2 tech reporters, 3 development conferences, a slew of product announcements. Mm-hmm. Blah, blah, blah. Yep. Anyway, we're thrilled. It's the beginning of summer movie season, so that means trailers dropping galore. That means more work from us.
Dropping from the sky, thousands dying as they're crushed under the weight of trailers.
You know, I was going to go with like a seagull poop metaphor, but I think yours is probably more apt, because certainly at least one of these trailers drops with a boatload of bombast.
Yes, and we should mention, you actually...
I saw a movie in the theater.
You went to a movie in the theater.
You
risk-taker.
It was so exciting. Oh, my gosh.
Wow. What is that like?
So I went to see Wonder Woman with my lady posse.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that is the...
It is a film that I understand that men are not allowed to see by law.
No.
Okay.
No. I'm here to
tell you... Tough but fair.
Yes. No men are allowed anymore. Mm-hmm. We had Amazon stationed at the door to make sure that's the case.
Exactly.
But I did go to see it with my lady posse, although we were missing one critical member because she was too busy having it all and was tired from that. Mm-hmm. But... the experience of seeing the movie, Wonder Woman itself, was not unlike the experience of seeing Ghostbusters last summer, where after it's over, you just have these knots of women hanging out in the lobby, smiling happily and, you know, exchanging their favorite bits of the night. So I feel hashtag blessed to have had that experience twice in 2 years.
Oh, it sounds unbearable.
Well, you know, when Gilead hits during the midterms, that's not going to happen anymore. Mm-hmm. But what also stood out, since this podcast is always at the top of my mind, even if it's not at the top of our to-do list, is I took note of the trailers that played before the Wonder Woman movie. And it was an interesting experience because we had back-to-back trailers for Spider-Man Homecoming and then for the Justice League.
Right.
And the energy in the theater palpably shifted from trailer to trailer. And not for the better when it got to Justice League.
Well, which one do you want to tackle first? This is
we're
living in a ladies' world now, thanks
to
Wonder Woman.
Yes, the matriarchal podcast.
Yeah.
Yes. Let's tackle Spider-Man Homecoming first.
Sure.
Because that was the one we were very excited about.
I think what America needs is another Spider-Man movie.
There's only been 2 reboots over the past 20 years, Phil.
Yeah.
I feel like we're down a couple compared to the Batman reboots.
This is Crisis on Infinite Spider-Man.
We haven't gotten to the Lego Spider-Man movie yet. You know that's coming.
It is coming, yes.
I mean, we've had Lego Batman, so surely there has to be, like, Lego parody.
Mm-hmm.
So, Spider-Man Homecoming... Because, Philip, you have a comprehensive policy against seeing superhero
movies, yes.
I'm going to have to fill you in.
Yes.
In Captain America Civil War, mm-hmm. everybody dresses up as the Marching 54th from Tennessee. No, they don't. I'm teasing. No, what happens is Tony Stark and Captain America get into a slap fight. They pick sides.
Yes.
Their friends all rally to join them. And because Tony Stark looks at Captain America's side, which includes... you know, actually, it makes no sense, because Captain America's side includes Hawkeye and Ant-Man, so it's not like he's dealing with heavy hitters here.
No, he did not get first pick in the draft.
No, but anyway, Tony Stark says, okay, what I need against a psychopath with a bunch of arrows, and a dude with a shrinky suit, and Faithful Falcon with his wings, and the Scarlet Witch, is I need to weaponize a teenager. So I'm going to take Peter Parker out of the Bronx, give him a super-duper suit, and then send him at people who were forged in the Crucible of World War II, and his job is to take them down.
Yes.
So that was what happens in Civil War. And somehow this is called fan service. And then they made a whole movie about this, where now that... Peter Parker has been called to the big leagues. When he goes back to the Bronx, he wants to be an Avenger. Tony Stark doesn't want him to be an Avenger. And so he has to kind of go back to being a kid, doesn't take too well to it. And then Michael Keaton shows up to make things interesting,
right.
Because I guess he's making Birdman,
yes,
too.
Yes, so this is where Birdman joins the Marvel Cinematic Universe,
apparently,
I guess.
Apparently so, yes. Mm-hmm. And I hope to God... Actually, that was actually... I love Ed Norton in that movie, so we can but hope that his pre-epic thespian makes a return. But anyway, the trailer for Spider-Man Homecoming that I saw in the theaters is kind of sweet and funny, because it shows Peter working on his high school stuff, and the one that you saw with me is a little bit different, but in the one in the theater, he finds out that for all of his new super suit abilities, Tony Stark has actually deliberately hobbled them with a protocol he calls training wheels. Ah. So part of the trailer goes into Peter trying to get a big boy suit and then running up against big boy enemies and then also having a clash with the same man who had no problem weaponizing him and throwing him at a PTSD, hydra-brainwashed assassin in Captain America. Like, all of a sudden, that apparently gets erased.
Right.
And Tony Stark is like, well, I regret everything, so go back to being a kid. Forgetting that, like, once you've let the spider out of the web, there's no stuffing him back in, to clumsily use the metaphor. But the trailer was high energy and cute, I thought.
So do all the other Spider-Mans, do they have, like, sort of a meeting where they get together and exchange notes? Like, Tobey Maguire's there and saying, here's what I did when I fought one of the goblin people. And
you may be mixing up the Marvel-verse with the DC-verse,
mm-hmm.
because it's in the DC superhero TV shows where you have, like, the parallel Earths,
yeah.
and all the little pals get along from different Earths and compare notes. In the Marvel Cinematic Universe, we've seen no evidence of parallel planets yet.
Okay.
Although I would dearly love it if there was a scene where Tom Holland was swinging by and Andrew Garfield is, like, just drinking a cup of coffee,
yes.
and then Tobey Maguire is presumably sleeping off a drunk in the corner.
Do they need to have a quorum to do a Spider-Man movie?
No. Mm-hmm. No, they don't.
Okay. All right. You know, I...
You're not going to go see the movie.
I'm not going to go see the movie. It's just... I understand that these are not sacred texts and that... that things get remade all the time, as we'll discuss later mm-hmm. in this podcast. It just seems to me that the Tobey Maguire movie came out in living memory.
Yes, it did.
And I realize that a lot of this is
and then they rebooted it again with Andrew Garfield, and, honey.
Yes,
this is the second reboot. Honey, in the time we've been married, they've launched this
there
franchise
have been three Spider-Men,
times.
Yes.
And we haven't been married that long.
No, we haven't. And that's the thing. It's one thing to have Batman unfold over generations. Mm-hmm. Each generation needs a Batman to call their own. But
the poor Oregon Trail generation, they got the Clooney Batman.
But,
I mean, we at least had Michael Keaton as Batman.
Literally, like, every graduating class now has a Spider-Man.
Yeah.
It's the 2018 Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. It's Miles O'Keefe.
Miles Morales is the name of that. Miles O'Keefe was in Cave Dwellers, honey.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, I get I.
How
get
much Keefe was in that movie?
Miles O'Keefe.
There
Thank
you go.
You, MST3K.
Yes. To whom we owe a profound debt.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, even if I wasn't interested
even if you weren't violently disinterested
in superhero movies.
Mm-hmm.
Hard pass on Spider-Man.
Yeah.
There's only one Spider-Man,
mm-hmm.
and his name is Tobey Maguire, or whoever it was who did the animated Spider-Man in the 1990s.
Not Tobey Maguire. Yeah.
And the Joe Perry from Aerosmith did the theme song.
Okay, I'll take your word for that.
No, it was true.
You watched a lot of cartoons about superheroes in the 90s.
Because I was in college and probably hungover. So
that seems like the best audience for them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that is when the X-Men comic
comics
was
TV,
on too,
yeah.
and mm-hmm. America fell in love with Gambit.
Yeah. And, you know, we've had, like, two different Charles Xaviers over the course of our marriage, too, because we've had Patrick Stewart as old Charles Xavier and James McAvoy as young Charles Xavier.
Yeah, well, that's, yeah.
Which, there is no computer morphing program that can explain that shift in facial features.
Don't get me started.
But that's what we're here for. What is the point of having a podcast if not to rant
incoherently
about things?
But yeah, as much as I'm violently disinterested in Spider-Man, I am aggressively violently disinterested, graphically violently disinterested in the Justice League.
Oh my God!
We had some laughs at old Wonder Woman's expense at the top of this podcast. At least I did. I'm happy that someone affiliated with a DC movie apparently finally said, hey, you know, people come to movies to actually be entertained.
Yeah.
People don't really want to go and go, oh, that superhero can fly and has powers. He seems really sad.
Yeah, so here's the thing, and let's just boomerang for a moment into, mm-hmm. I would say, a 5-minute précis
uh-huh.
on Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
I will join the legions of people who say that, yeah, the movie drags a little in the third act.
Sure.
It does. However, Gal Gadot is an amazing casting find. Mm-hmm. She is up there with Christopher Reeve as Superman in terms of, your mortal enemy, Christopher Reeve.
My mortal enemy, Christopher Reeve.
In terms of owning a role and not being overwhelmed by the iconography, but rather embellishing it and building on it. She has such warmth and mm-hmm. such presence, and she's got a great sense of humor, and it's a deeply physical role, and she's entirely plausible in it. And she's tremendously appealing, and she's so beautiful. I mean, it's not as in a, I would enjoy thinking salaciously of this tremendous woman type of way.
Yeah.
But it's something where you watch her and you just marvel at the fact that occasionally DNA throws up a combination like this. Because it's beautiful. I mean, she's beautiful. She's classically proportioned. She's graceful. She's deeply believable as somebody who's empathetic. Her performance is great. Chris Pine plays the girl, more or less. No, but he's really good.
Yeah.
And I find it appealing and relieving that somebody who, you know, has taken the lead on franchises like Star Trek is totally fine with playing second banana romantic interest guy and comic relief, which he does quite ably. And it was just, the cast chemistry is there. They both did a fine job nailing down their roles. Patty Jenkins does a great job using color and composition to create moods and senses all the way through. There's a plausible, believable arc. There are parts of the story that you kind of guess 5 minutes into it. However, here's the thing. It's a fun movie. Like, it ends in heartbreak. It's heartbreaking in parts, or it should be for the character. But the point is, like, she ends up in a different place than she started. She's not sad. There are no mothers named Martha.
There's no therapy sessions.
No, it's ultimately exhilarating because you are looking at somebody who, over the course of a few days, comes into her own as a really powerful individual, and what's more, takes responsibility and finds moral purpose in that power. And that is something I haven't seen in Suicide Squad or in Batman Sulks a Lot or in Superman Wishes That He Didn't Have to Fight Michael Shannon. Like, they all just seem deeply unhappy over having anything resembling a conscience, and at the end of it, there's no sense of growth. It's just them being, like, resigned and sulky or whatever. And this is this is just much different.
Clark, in this session, we wanted to talk about your father. Well, my father put me on a spaceship and blasted me off and left me with these ice cubes that I stick in the Fortress of Solitude, and he talks to me. Okay, Clark, we're going to play this stick that your father left us for this session.
Clark, I'm so happy that you're finally getting the therapy you need, the closure, and your mother and I prayed for this. Now, let's talk about when you were a little boy.
I think everybody who hears that is going to have to realize that you're making fun of Marlon Brando.
Yes.
From the original ones.
It was like Marlon Brando was in the room, I thought.
Was it?
Yeah.
Was it really?
It was.
Okay. But not the young, hot Marlon
Brando. No, not the young, hot Marlon Brando. Old, fat, disgusting Marlon Brando.
Dr. Moreau Marlon Brando. David Thewlis was in Wonder Woman, which just brings it around full circle.
Just pay me my money and I'll be in any movie.
Since you know David Thewlis is an Island of Dr. Moreau.
Island of Dr. Moreau. Yes, we're all familiar with Island of Dr. Moreau.
No, we're not, because most people have taste, just not us.
Okay.
Anyway, this movie is joyful. Yeah. And one of the things that I think has bedeviled the DC franchise is at the same time that you've had Zack Snyder giving everything this weird heroic realism imagery and powerful men being sad and ambivalent about being privileged and so on and so forth, is on TV, you've had funny, sharp, poignant, dramatic, interesting, dynamic TV series that have built out a DC universe that is joyful and optimistic. If you look at Supergirl in the first season of Flash, and nuanced and full of heart, and the families that you make instead of the ones that you come into, like Arrow, and zany and irreverent and sort of, oh God, how do we get into this? Which is like Legends of Tomorrow. And you've got what is arguably like a rich, pleasurable serial experience. And then you go and you see a trailer for the Justice League movie, and it is so deeply joyless. Everything is loud and wet and mean and dark and hairy and on fire all at once. And there's nothing in there. There's no place for your eye to rest to appreciate any of the fighting choreography. There's no way for you to get a good bead on the symbolism or the iconography of the characters. And again, they've assembled a bunch of very good-looking actors who are physical embodiments of these things, plus Ben Affleck. And they're supposed to be fighting something big and scary and alien. And instead, what we got was basically 2 minutes of incoherent, poorly lit kick-punching. And it was just a slug. Like, you could feel the energy in the theater go down when Justice League was going on. And I thought, wow, this they really shouldn't have played Spider-Man and Justice League back to back, because it just points out the differences in the filmmaking approaches.
I don't want to put the blame on just one person, because there are probably a lot of reasons that the Justice League trailer doesn't work.
Not all those reasons start with Ben Affleck.
But for me, it's a big reason, because he
looks so unhappy.
Yeah, and I want
to. It's like someone forced him to play Batman.
Just so that we're not attacking Ben Affleck, I think he's a really good director.
Very good. Argo's a great movie.
Argo is very...
The Town is a good movie.
Yeah. I've enjoyed all the movies that he's directed, and usually the weakest thing in the Ben Affleck movies is
him.
Ben Affleck.
Yeah.
But that gets to the point. Batman, since most of his face is covered by a mask, is the most...
Try not to have him played by somebody who's never acted with his eyes.
The most expressive thing about Batman is his eyes, and Ben Affleck has doll's eyes. Dead eyes.
Shark eyes.
Shark eyes. You ever look at Ben Affleck's eyes? They're doll eyes.
Yeah.
Till he bites into you and they roll back all white.
Now I'm imagining Ben Affleck gnawing on someone's arm in a casino somewhere. And someone's like, no, Ben Affleck,
you go
no.
in the cage. Cage goes in the water. Ben Affleck's in the water. Our Ben Affleck.
Like Matt Damon has to come out with a rolled up newspaper and keep hitting Ben Affleck in the back of the head. Let go, Ben Affleck, let go.
Mm-hmm.
No. Well, I'm going to go with, you and I were talking about who should play Batman instead.
Yes.
And I think we can agree that Don Cheadle has moved out of the Batman window.
Yes, he has aged out of Batman.
Which is too bad.
Unless it's that
but
that,
age him is so great.
That remake where he's just sitting in the Wayne Manor being all old and bitter.
Like in a cybernetic suit. Like,
yes.
You know, with like a visible neck brace.
Yes.
I would go for that Batman,
okay.
By the way. I want to see the Batman where he's like really bitter about his broken down aging body while Superman and Wonder Woman are still young and beautiful, by the way. I would love that movie.
That would be a good movie.
That said, did you not suggest Lee Pace as your ideal?
I believe I did suggest Lee Pace, because apparently the gods have fated Lee Pace to always make movies where his face is covered.
Well, that was Ronan the Destroyer.
Uh-huh.
He also plays like the fabulous
Apocalypse in the X-Men movie. Or
he was that was Oscar Isaac.
Oh, no.
Beautiful Oscar Isaac.
I don't even know what I'm talking about.
No,
anymore.
Well, that was another fabulously stupid idea where you take, let's find a really expressive actor, one who works in a tremendously naturalistic school where subtlety is how he conveys everything, and let's cover him in 5 tons of blue makeup.
Yeah.
But they did that with Lee Pace in
Guardians of the Galaxy.
And then they stuck him in like this crazy like blonde Cher wig for the Hobbit movies.
That's the one I was thinking of.
Where he's like the immortally bitchy king of the elves.
Yes.
And spends all of his time like cocking an eyebrow at the back of his moose. Yeah. No, I think he'd make a great Batman though, because he could also do the Bruce Wayne Playboy.
Yeah.
This is the one thing I really enjoyed about Christian Bale's Batman, was there's a scene in the first one of the Batman trilogies where he turns on
Chris Bale.
He turns on the Playboy
Chris Bale, because we're good friends, me and Chris Bale.
Yeah.
He really embraced the inner fop of the Bruce Wayne role.
And showed how much of a put on it was and how much contempt he had for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think you necessarily have to have contempt. I think the way Lee Pace would play it was he would maybe shrug on the Bruce Wayne Playboy persona as, this is who I wish I could be.
Yes.
But I know better. And then when he's Batman, he could be like, okay, this is who I am also, but I kind of wish I weren't. Because you knew from Halt and Catch Fire, he's very good at playing somebody who is good at running away from his self-loathing.
Yes. Yes, that is in his toolkit.
Yeah. So, yeah. So far, Ben Affleck put in Lee Pace.
Mm-hmm. And as Spider-Man shows, you can have 1,000 actors playing the same part, and no. You people will still buy tickets.
Yeah. I mean, it's like Superman. We've had...
Yeah. 82 Supermen.
We've had 3 at this point, because we've got the one in the CW shows, who is fun and optimistic and delightful to watch. And we've had Henry Cavill, who looks like he's been carved from marble, and would probably give a better performance if it weren't Zack Snyder directing him.
I believe that's true.
Because Zack Snyder has a lot of contempt for the role, if you ask me.
Yes, he does.
And then we had Brandon Routh, who mm-hmm. is adorkable and does a great job, again, in the DC TV universe.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just a weird movie he did.
Yeah.
Yeah, plus he was up against Kevin Spacey. That casting for that was just deeply weird. Anyway, the Justice League looks grim and joyless, and I'm kind of creeped out by the Soviet-style fonts and stars that they're using in the logos. So I don't think I'm going to pay to go see it.
No. Then you and I have that in common.
Yeah. I mean, they'll come on HBO at some point. Mm-hmm. Assuming we still get HBO, then I'll TIFO it then.
Yeah.
I mean, it's either going to be visually confusing on a big screen or visually confusing on our TV, and this way I don't have to pay extra for it. So that was it for the Tights and Flight genre, was it not?
I believe.
Oh, we got one more special FX heavy trailer we wanted to discuss.
Is that The Mummy?
Yes.
The Mummy? The biopic about Bill Mummy?
Yes, yes. Action packed. Lots of CGI. Didn't know Bill Mummy was in for it.
Speaking of reboots, speaking of films that were made in living memory that were actually kind of enjoyable. They're doing a new Mummy.
How do you think Brendan Fraser feels about that?
I think he's fine with it.
He was really charming in the original.
Yeah, it was not a bad. It was not. So
here's the thing: it did what it was supposed to, which was it was a mid-tier popcorn movie. Like sometimes when you go to the theater, you don't want something where an anti-hero is busy chewing the scenery for an Oscar nod, and you don't want something that was based on a toy franchise. You just want a ripping yarn that is moderately entertaining and does not require you to keep a chart for backstory.
So speaking of things that are not sacred texts.
Uh-huh.
The Mummy is not. It was one mm-hmm. of the Universal horror movies back from the 1930s.
Mm-hmm.
Your daughter and I have actually watched The Mummy with Boris Karloff,
mm-hmm.
Which it's not a bad movie. Mm-hmm. It suffers from 1930s movie disease where it's kind of slow and plodding in parts. Part of that is because The Mummy is slow. And let's make a monster who really moves slowly.
They didn't embalm sprinters, Philip.
No. He does not move quickly.
Although a mummy that moved like Usain Bolt would be really unsettling.
Well, exactly. And I guess in this new mummy, this mummy seems very quick for someone who's been embalmed for thousands of years.
So I want to point out, I watched the trailer with you, and it's big and dumb and CGI everywhere. And putting aside the weirdness of Tom Cruise compulsively ripping off his shirt in every movie he's in now. He does. I mean, at this point, I feel like somebody should just stand up in a Tom Cruise movie and scream, "Put that thing on, Tom Cruise!"
You're embarrassing the children.
He is.
You frightened the cat.
Okay, we get it. You haven't eaten bread since 2000. Fine. Five. Mm-hmm. But it's a little disturbing to basically be like, my goal for this movie is to beat the crap out of a woman, kind of what he's doing there.
Yeah.
And
the evil mummy is a chick this time around.
You know, which is fine, except that
villains can be of every genre and gender.
Yes.
Lisa?
Yes, progressive red skull. Just the thing you want to tell me about your dating life.
No, I just, you know, gender is a spectrum and you move all across it.
Gender is a social construct. Sexuality is a spectrum.
Whatever. I don't need to be lectured by you. I just want to say it's good to see Wonder Woman assert herself.
Yeah, we're talking about The Mummy now there.
But I want to talk about Wonder Woman as well.
All right, Progressive Red Skull, how would you handle the Wonder Woman?
Well, I would fight her as an equal. And so, let me tell you, if one of my henchmen said, "Oh, let's get that woman," I'd say, Larry, we had that discussion with HR. Don't make me report you again.
Progressive Red Skull, how many women did you promote during your time as the head of Hydra?
Lisa, it's not about numbers, it's about quality.
You're not an ally, Progressive Red Skull. You think you are, but you're not an ally. You don't walk the walk. Every space you make should be a feminist space. Don't come into my feminist space.
You've given me a lot to think about. I'm going to go now.
So there. speaking of fan service. It's not like the original Mummy. Oh, God, they're remaking the original Mummy. Now it won't be so plotting and the villain might actually move. It's just... And I think we had this discussion before when we talked about Jack Reacher Around.
Tiny Jack Reacher. Little Jack Reacher.
Little Jack Reacher. Tom Cruise is 10 years older than me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I'm an old, tired man. And then Tom Cruise is running around like a nincompoop in another movie.
A shirtless nincompoop.
Shirtless nincompoop Tom Cruise running around fighting things, punching things, diving through cars and crashing in planes. And here's Russell Crowe looking like he hasn't given up bread since 2000, I can tell you that.
Well, this is the thing I like, is that Russell Crowe's like, I've gotten moth-eaten, I've decided I'm an actor, I just do this to make money because people sue me for punching them. Yes. And
Hello, Tom Cruise, I'm Russell Crowe. You might be wondering why you're in my mummy lair.
So here's the thing, I like Russell Crowe.
I don't mind him. I can take or leave him.
No, I like him. I've liked him since the 80s, where he was in a weird movie with Guy Pearce, where one of them was
Romper
blind.
Romper Stomper.
No, there's Romper Stomper, which is where he stomps things.
Yes.
But, hence
his name, Bob Romper.
I forget the name of the movie, but he plays a blind guy. Mm. And it's actually like a sensitive character study. It used to show on IFC late at night.
I really liked him in The Informant.
Yes.
He's very good in that.
He's very good in The Informant. Mm-hmm. And I think we can agree that Gladiator was better than it had any right to be.
Yeah.
Thanks to his work in that.
Yeah, sure. Well,
it was. He was great in LA Confidential.
Oh, yeah. That's an outstanding performance.
So I think even his misses are interesting. Mm-hmm. For example, in Les Miserables, he like shout sings most of his stuff.
Speak sings.
Yes, he shout sings most of his stuff. Yeah. But the point is, like, he tried.
Yeah, he did.
You know, he reached outside his comfort zone for that. We loved him and Ryan Gosling in the Nice Guys.
We did enjoy that movie. Okay, I take it back. You're better than The Mummy.
Yeah, Russell Crowe.
Russell Crowe.
And the thing is, I think I've stood up for Tom Cruise on this podcast before.
Probably have.
And
when you stand up for Tom Cruise, you're taller than Tom Cruise.
I'm taller than Tom Cruise sitting down.
Yeah, well.
He has a phenomenal work ethic. He's built an amazing career by deliberately mixing and matching the work that he does with directors. I'm kind of baffled as to why he made this, to be frank. Because if you want a genre, if Tom Cruise needs to keep ripping off his shirts, there are still hundreds of Mission Impossible movies to be made. And Simon Pegg can, like, eat donuts in the background with Ving Rhames and, mm-hmm. and be tech support, like he's done for the last two movies. And at some point, like, the thing is Tom Cruise used to want to try to be a legit actor, and he has glimmers of being able to do that, like with Magnolia, which frustrates me, because I hate to think that's the best he was, because that was 25 years ago.
Mm.
But, you know, it would be nice if he stopped flea-farting around with, I'm a tough guy who takes off my shirt and kick-punches things, and, like, maybe took a page out of Paul Newman's playbook and decided, yeah, I'm going to act now. I'm going to do smaller projects where I actually have to take risks and say something in a role where I'm expressing myself, not aiming at a demographic, not aiming at a box office goal, not, you know, reciting canned bits for
a Clint Eastwood.
Show.
Clint Eastwood would be another good example.
Because Clint Eastwood started making art that had something to say once he got older.
And started taking parts that were reflective of his age.
Yeah. And even his ethos, I would add, too.
One of the great things about In the Line of Fire is mm-hmm. that entire movie is, you are way too old to be doing this, Clint Eastwood.
Yeah, exactly.
You really need to stop. And it's a great movie.
And as a director, Clint Eastwood has made some of the more deeply moral pictures of our time, which I think is a really brave thing to do.
Exactly.
To take a moral stand and to make art that supports that is a phenomenal step to take. And it's frustrating. Again, I defend Tom Cruise because he's built a fantastic career. He works hard. No one will ever doubt that. But in many ways, he seems to be averse to taking risks. And I think he is at an age now where he can afford to take plenty of risks, and it will and the reward is probably bigger than the loss.
Yeah.
So I find it frustrating that he's squandering on this.
So anyhow, this is going to reintroduce all the universal monsters, your Frankenstein uh-huh. monsters, mm-hmm. your Draculas, your creatures
Jesus
of the
Christ.
Black
vampires.
Lagoon, your invisible men, your wolfmans. And
So the reason I'm all about it is because I'm just imagining all of the CGI and all of the stunt casting and all of the is it a sexy vampires and stuff like that. And I feel like, you know, I feel like we're taking a break from vampires for now. Or as my daughter says, take a break of it.
So two things. First off, for the young people, since I've seen all of the
old ones,
old Universal Pictures, or at least the ones worth seeing.
Mm-hmm.
Bride of Frankenstein, very good.
Yeah.
Invisible Man, very good. Basically, see the James Whale pictures.
Elsa Lancaster is very good in Bride of Frankenstein.
Yeah, no, those, those are the two worth seeing.
The thing is, I didn't appreciate what a gifted physical actor she is until I watched that, and then the Henry VIII movie we watched, where she plays Anne of Cleves.
Yeah.
And the physical comedy she does in Anne of Cleves is bar none, phenomenal.
Apparently she based her role in Bride of Frankenstein on geese.
Yeah.
She's trying to imitate a goose.
The look on her face. She's phenomenal.
Yeah, she's great in that. Invisible Man, very good. Wolfman is okay.
Yeah.
Dracula is a bit stagey.
Although Bela Lugosi is phenomenal in the part.
He's very good, and I forget the name of the guy who plays Van Helsing, but he also pops up in The Mummy. The Mummy, I can take or leave, the original.
So the thing is, though, I feel like you need to reboot the notion of vampires as a whole, because we've gone through like a whole decade-long thing about sexy, gleaming vampires.
We have.
Now there's The Strain on TV, and I had to recap that Dracula show for NBC with Jonathan Rhys-Meyers, who played an admirably bananas Dracula.
That was an interesting show.
I love him as an actor because he is not afraid to be a lunatic. Yeah. Like, it's just any role, he's like, can I turn it up to 11, please? And you're like, why, of course, Jonathan Rhys-Meyers, please turn up to 11. He's like, 12 it is! And you're like, oh, there we go. Bye!
Anyhow, if this whole Mummy thing leads to a Dark Universe reboot of Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein with Key and Peele, then I'm all for that.
Oh, God, that's genius.
Yeah, then I am for that.
I was going to suggest Jack Black and Ben Stiller, but no, Key and Peele is much better.
No, if it's Jack Black and Ben Stiller, then I kill it with fire.
Wow.
Burn all the movies. Destroy Cineplexes.
Yeah.
This can never happen. So that's The Mummy.
Uh-huh.
And it's apparently terrible, based on all the reviews I've heard.
Yeah, yeah. It came out, you people who are listening to it, The Mummy came out in the past.
Yes, we're coming to you from the future, where The Mummy is not good.
Ooh. Yes. So while I was also in the theater, the other trailer, the theater for Wonder Woman, the other trailer that seemed to be thematically appropriate was the trailer for Atomic Blonde. As you know, it's a movie based on a graphic novel by incomparable member Anthony Johnson. His was called The Coldest City.
Uh-huh.
This movie is called Atomic Blonde, and it features Charlize Theron as a butt-kicking lady who kicks butts, and because it takes place in the 1980s in the world of intelligence, there's lots of double-crossing. To be honest, the narrative thread in the trailer is a little incomprehensible, but what caught my eye and kept my eye was the aesthetic choice to stick mostly with blacks and whites while making the movie. She's always wearing black or she's always wearing white. The white hair against dark backdrops when she's busy brutalizing people. I enjoy a movie that has comics as the root source, where there is a clear callback to the visual style of the source material.
Mm. That's true.
I think
people shit all over The Watchmen, but one of the things I did like about The Watchmen is that it actually did strive to have some of the visual aesthetics of a comic book.
Yeah.
And whether or not the rest of the movie was successful,
the credits are brilliant in The Watchmen. The credits are amazing.
Yeah.
And I just remember watching the credits and thinking, if the whole movie was like this, this would be great. It wasn't. But
no. But that, to your point, yes, I do like it when
we crap all over Zack Snyder, but he did that really successfully in 300, because it really hews back to the source material really closely.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to.
No, I was just saying, to your point, it is good when movies call back to their source material
and actually appropriate
some of the visual cues of a comic book without overdoing it.
Or subtly evoke it. And that's the thing that I warmed to with this trailer was you could practically see the panels, especially during the fight sequences. And I know from having read some of Anthony's other work, he does a great job with... Anthony writes really good women. And he does a great job, especially with women who are in situations where their personal and professional morals are compromised, and they have to see their way clear. So, assuming that the adaptation manages to keep this going, the visuals look really promising. Toby Jones looks nicely creepy. John Goodman's in it, so you know we'll enjoy that part of it.
Yeah,
and it was exciting to see it. Also, another thing I really enjoyed about the trailer, I loved the 1980s music because, and perhaps this is because I've watched a couple seasons of The Americans now, where in The Americans, the music plays an important part in setting the mood, but the music they used in the trailer here, especially Personal Jesus and the remixes of it, does a great job of taking you back to a really specific time and place where the Cold War really was the canvas upon which world policy was drawn, and pop culture reflected the anxieties and the efforts to try to reframe the Cold War from the perspective of people who were affected by it but weren't necessarily direct participants in it. So I like the trailer. I'm looking forward to the movie.
Yeah. It's not for me, but very few things are. So, yeah.
Can you tell me why it's not for you, perhaps?
It's hard to articulate. I think I'm going through a thing right now where there's lots of punching and shooting and kicking, and I go,
It'd be nice to have a trailer with a little less punching.
Little less punching. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sure perhaps the final product is not as punchy.
Yeah.
But I don't know who. I wish I could credit the person who wrote the review for the movie. What was it?
Describe it.
It was that caper movie, Aces or Full Aces or. I'm blanking on the thing. Anyhow, when I say the review, you'll know it, because the review was basically, it is like being hit in the face with meat for an hour.
Oh, it's the one, it was in Tahoe?
Yeah.
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 It was set in Tahoe somehow.
Yeah, and, Loaded Aces or some such thing. And that was another one where it was...
Oh, we watched that.
We watched it.
And we looked at each other and we were just kind of like, what just happened to us?
Yeah, and I'm sure...
It was like our brains had been roofied.
I'm sure this movie is not that movie because, oh boy. It's just... A lot of punching and a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah.
A lot of the old ultra-violence. For old Philzy.
Yeah.
And I don't have that little Clockwork Orange thing to keep my eyes open so that I...
Well, why don't we move on to...
Let's move on.
A gentler trailer for you, then.
Yes.
One where there's a little bit of violence.
Yeah.
Just a little bit.
Okay.
But in the service of comedy.
Yeah.
And that's the trailer for Rough Night, which, again, preceded Wonder Woman, because clearly all the trailers were
Hey, you chicks like to go to movies, huh? Well, here's another movie for you.
You know, the way executives carry on in Hollywood, you think they're shocked by this news.
Yes.
Rough Night.
Ladies have disposable income time on their hands.
What? So Rough Night has three comic powerhouses plus two pretty actresses.
Yeah.
And the premise behind it is one pretty actress is getting married.
Yes.
And one comic powerhouse accidentally kills a male stripper. Mm-hmm. And then what follows is Weekend at Bernie's, except with chicks.
Yes.
So I'll say it up front. I will go see this.
I'm sure that you will.
And I will go see this mostly because I recently saw Office Christmas Party on a plane. I'm not proud of that. But I saw the movie Office Christmas Party on a plane.
There's no judgment on planes. The number of movies that I've seen on planes.
So here's the thing, is I saw Office Christmas Party, and there is an absolutely hilarious scene with a pimp named Trina that had me laughing out loud in the middle of the plane, which is just horrifying for the people around me. And
I'm sure they were enchanted by your laugh.
You were a sweet man. Mm-hmm. And Trina the pimp is played by Jillian Bell, and she picks up and walks away with every scene she's in. So she's now I'm like, I will see whatever Jillian Bell is in because she's so funny. And to get back to Office Christmas Party for a minute, it is not what you would call like a landmark comedy. But what is notable about it is how every woman in the movie literally steals every scene she has away from T.J. Miller. It is supposed to be a T.J. Miller vehicle, and yet everybody around him just kind of effortlessly picks up their scenes and walks away with them.
Hmm.
I mean, I understand Jason Bateman's in there too, but whatever. He's very straight-laced, and who cares at this point?
He's doing the Jason Bateman role.
Yeah, where it's, what am I doing with these crazy people around me? Oh, it's so crazy. And an office Christmas party, like Olivia Munn is like, oh, I'm a hot hacker, and I'm supposed to be interested in Jason Bateman, but I'm also hot and a hacker, because did I mention I'm a hot hacker and I'm a cool girl? But meanwhile, Kate McKinnon is... I get the feeling that whenever Kate McKinnon shows up, like, there's a rider in her contract that says, just let her do what she wants. And,
well, that's how you get her.
Yeah. But Kate McKinnon plays a bizarro Christmas, like, a cat-obsessed person in Christmas Office Party. It works out really well. Jennifer Aniston is hilarious. And
I find that hard to believe.
Okay, you know, you have actually crossed the line here, Miss.
No. Please justify.
Jennifer Aniston is a vastly underrated comic actress. She has
assumes evidence not entered into the record.
Have you ever seen? Have I made you watch Where the Millers with me?
You have not.
Okay, that's one of them. She has what I've seen her playing a number of. She's got a shtick. It's her role. It's her thing that she does. But she plays a lovely, acerbic, wry, and self-aware comic presence, and it's nice and it's lightweight. And sometimes it's what you need instead of over-the-top broad antics or womp-womp sad sack comedy or out-and-out lunacy.
So, speaking of movies seen on planes, when I was on a plane in living memory, the movie Mother's Day was playing.
Oh, Jesus. And why would you watch that?
I did not watch that. I actually spent most of the flight writing a story because I was on deadline.
Uh-huh.
And I would occasionally look up and see the thing and kind of... I didn't have the headphones on, so I had no idea what they were saying. I would supply my own dialogue and sort of fill in the blanks.
Yeah.
And when I landed, I eventually looked up the plot synopsis for Mother's Day.
Mm-hmm.
And shockingly, I was able to glean most of what was going on just by watching the meat sacks up on the screen and doing their thing.
Where the Millers is like a fine way to spend.
Okay.
2 hours. If you're laying on the couch and you're sick or you're hungover or you just don't want to think, you watch Where the Millers.
Or the animated Spider-Man cartoon from the 1990s. Yeah,
and you appreciate the fact. I mean, Jason Sudeikis is like, hello, everybody. I'm bland and funny. Here I go. Yeah. And Jennifer Aniston has a nice, I think astringent is a good word for it.
Mm.
It's tough because I think at this point I was like, oh, Rachel, womp womp. And a lot of her early movie roles in the 90s played into that, oh, she's like the girl next door, but bangable thing going on. But she really does have comic chops, and it's a shame.
She is poison for me because one of the last office jobs I held was when she made that movie with Gerard Butler.
Oh, God.
And that billboard was in my view for months because apparently no one had the money to take it down.
Yeah.
And so it was just, Jennifer Aniston is so funny with Gerard Butler.
No,
you'll be laughing until you beg God to kill you because
like
you're watching a Jennifer Aniston movie.
No, I feel like the blame there should be laid with Gerard Butler.
I'll allow that.
Yeah. No, and I think that, I mean, honestly, Jennifer Aniston doesn't need to work. She's got grabillions. But, you know, I think that she's a lot funnier than people give her credit for, and she certainly was. But to get back to the point, Jillian Bell is in Rough Night.
Yes, she is. Rough Night, hey! Is that a movie that we were talking about?
Kate McKinnon and Alana Glazer are also in it, too. And so what you have here are two very pretty actresses in Zoe Kravitz and Scarlett Johansson, and then three women who write and perform their own comedy,
right?
And therefore have more of a license to not be relentlessly focused group for heterosexual normativity.
Mm-hmm.
And Kate McKinnon has apparently decided she's Australian for this role.
Yeah.
And again, I have a feeling she just came to the set and was like, can I get away with this? And they're like, oh, just let her do it. She's Kate McKinnon. And it looks like it could either be just a disaster and a squandering of everyone's talent, or surprisingly fun. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, well, watching it, I felt like between Bridesmaids and Hangover that this...
And Bad Moms, don't forget Bad Moms.
And Bad Moms, which was actually apparently better than we were initially... I feel like we've... We've been past this stop on the subway before.
Have we reached peak packs of women behave badly?
I think this genre is there's not much new turf to discover if they are able to discover it. Full credit to them.
Yeah.
I did not see a lot in that trailer that made me think, they're really unpacking this in a new and exciting way.
I think it's a Scarlett Johansson comedy vehicle.
It absolutely is.
I'm beautiful, but I am funny.
Yeah. Noted. Comedic talent Scarlett Johansson.
She's hosted SNL a couple of times. She's
I'm sure that
she's
she
got
does.
Like the distaff version of handsome man disease. You know how every really handsome guy also wants. You know he's really funny.
Sure, John Hamm and Brad Pitt
and Chris Hemsworth and Chris Pine.
Yeah,
yes, all of them tragically underrated comedians, right?
Yep, they are.
Yeah, and she has like the lady version of that.
Okay, well,
So she does do a very funny thing on SNL where she does Black Widow as a rom-com where you see her in the cat suit in a pink cardigan. And it's deeply hilarious. Okay. It's just the visual.
I'll give you that.
Yeah. I'm excited to see how Jillian Bell does. I'm excited to see Kate McKinnon. I'm excited for Alana Glazer. I could take or leave the other two.
Yeah.
And I like ScarJo fine as a dramatic actress, and she was very, very funny in
Hail Caesar.
Thank you. Yes. I was going to say Josh Brolin tries to convince us that What's-His-Face is not evil.
Hail Caesar. Yeah, Hail Caesar. There you go. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. That, again, rough night. Because they're working a theme when they do these trailers.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And I think the last one we wanted to talk about was Murder on the Orient Express.
Yes. No.
Mm-hmm. Just because this fits in with our mummy. Hey, let's reboot a film.
Yes, apparently
Let's redo something. Or uh-huh. Spider-Man. Hey, let's redo something we did just a few years ago.
Yep.
Murder on the Orient Express. I have seen the Sidney Lumet version from the 1970s.
Uh-huh.
It's enjoyable. I know lots of people really love that movie. I think it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's enjoyable. It's basically in the 70s and 80s they would make these all-star cast movies and it's one of them.
Murder by Death.
Yeah. And it doesn't really offend me that you would remake this. In fact, the nice thing about Agatha Christie texts is that they lend themselves to different interpretations. I just look at that mustache they planted on Kenneth Branagh.
Oh, it was like even walruses are like that is extreme.
Yeah, that is some that is like the you're flipping on late night cable and you've come across the mustache growing competition. And
on ESPN.
On ESPN 8.
The Ocho!
And Kenneth Branagh has just been rejected. Yeah, that you've pulled up the viewer, listener, she has pulled up the screenshot of Kenneth Branagh.
Mm-hmm.
I encourage you because it looks like a Muppet has died on his face.
Looks like some scientists from National Geographic have discovered whole new species of caterpillars.
Mm-hmm.
And they ran out of specimen jars, so they brought over, like, their least favorite entomologist and were like, here, your face! Coop.
Yes, he's playing Hercule Poirot, the world's greatest detective. I'm not a Frenchie, I'm a Belgian.
Yep.
Classically, the mustache on Poirot has sort of been the Raleigh fingers curled thing, mm-hmm. and Kenneth Branagh said no, bigger, thicker, badder.
Yep.
And so, again, your all-star cast. You got your Johnny Depps. You got your Josh Gads. You got your
Penelope
Cruz.
You've got Daisy Ridley.
Yes, all the stars.
You have Leslie Odom Jr. You have Olivia Colman, who I love.
Uh-huh.
You've got Judi Dench.
Yep. All the stars have been removed. Neil deGrasse Tyson has no more job because all the stars are in this movie, Lisa.
Womp womp.
Yeah.
Michelle Pfeiffer is the Bitter Widow.
There yeah, it's going to be one of those movies that is really
and Willem Dafoe.
That is really going to be a lot of fun.
God, I love weird old Willem Dafoe. He's a lot of fun as he gets older.
He is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's going to be either a lot of fun and a really enjoyable movie, or it's going to be unwatchable.
So I have to admit that I have a hard time watching Johnny Depp.
Well, yeah. For a
couple different reasons, but to stick to the cinematic ones and not the more salacious and gossipy ones. I feel that at this point he has done exactly the opposite of Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
And but at that point, I feel like it's kind of a bit of laziness in and of itself, where he's like, I'm just going to show up and do as the spirit moves me. And I feel like it's disrespectful.
Mm.
Because at this point, he's not really putting there's no craftsmanship behind it. There's no effort. There's no respect for the craft. It's just him being like, wouldn't it be funny if I put on eyeliner and mumbled for a while? Or wouldn't it be funny if I like ran around the limp and spoke with a crazy accent or what have you? And that is not the sign of somebody who is trying to say anything with his work.
Right.
Or trying to reach for any, or trying to take somebody on the fringes of human experience and bring it into a sense of universality of experience or anything like that. This is somebody, he's like the goth kid in high school who's like, I'm so novel, I'm so different, I'm so misunderstood, you guys just don't get me. Because deep down inside, they're terrified at how ordinary they may actually be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
His work comes off as something that's spoiled and overindulged, without creativity, without originality. And I don't know if that's going to come through here, but you know, he's acting with a bunch of Brits, so with luck they beat that out of him in the first few scenes because they're all professionals.
It's very possible, and
we can but hope.
And again, the cast of the movie suggests that
Derek Jacobi's in this too. How nice!
Yes, suggests that everything is going to be at least professionally done.
Yeah.
So yeah. Oh, we're looking up all the still shots of everyone.
Yeah, well, that's probably how they do the PR.
Oh my goodness! And Kenneth Branagh is directing himself, so you know that it won't be self-indulgent in the least.
Oh God, he's a fine director when he's not directing himself.
Yeah, I agree.
And unlike Ben Affleck, he's a decent actor.
Yes.
So
I actually okay. I think Henry V is great.
Yes, I love that movie.
And I really enjoyed Dead Again,
mm-hmm.
of the Kenneth Branagh collection of movies.
Oh, I like Much Ado About Nothing. Mm-hmm. Reasonable people are allowed to disagree.
Reasonable people are allowed to disagree. I had some problems with that adaptation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not the least of which was Kenneth Branagh's performance in that. But that's neither here nor there. Anyhow, that's. Mm-hmm. I think we've
bottomed it out.
We've talked up trailers. Do we want to do the what we've been watching things we like?
We sort of did that all the way through.
Well,
so.
I didn't because I don't go to movies much anymore, yeah. Lady.
Well, you know, it's not. You could if you wanted to.
That's true. I wanted to see the Ben Wheatley movie that. Whose title I'm now blanking on. Freeze Frame? Time Freeze? I don't know. There was people trapped in the building shooting each other. For all my talk about, ooh, punchy movies, I'm not sure if I like that. But
you like shooting movies.
Yes,
yeah.
I do enjoy shooting movies. I saw, you know, I will do a quick shout out for a movie I recently watched on cable.
Is it called Free Fire?
Free Fire.
Okay, all right.
Freeze Frame.
Yep.
His adaptation of the Jade Giles song. It's part of the sequence of movies. His next movie will be Centerfold.
Yes.
About a man whose blood runs cold when his memory has just been sold.
Oh, God.
Charlize
Theron appears in that one. Yes. She's shooting everybody.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
the movie that I'd like to recommend is Act of Violence.
Uh-huh.
It's a Fred Zinnemann movie. He you may know him from such movies as High Noon and Day of the Jackal and From Here to Eternity.
Mm-hmm.
This is a smaller picture he made with Robert Ryan and Van Johnson. Where they were in the army together, and Robert Ryan blames Van Johnson for collaborating with the Nazis in a POW camp.
It was really beautifully shot.
And guess what Van Johnson did? The movie makes no bones about that secret.
Yeah.
And so it's basically Robert Ryan wants his revenge, and Van Johnson wants to that revenge
being
taken.
Not to be revenged, yes.
Mary Astor shows up as a barfly.
Yeah, she's great.
She is terrific
in
that.
And I say this as somebody who's... always thought Mary Astor was a tad overrated.
Mm-hmm. Seek it out. It's not a really
it's
well...
It's on TCM, though.
It's out there. It's not a well-heralded movie, but it's worth your time.
Yeah.
And the fact that Lisa is actually now playing games on her iPad as we're recording, not to call you out for your total lack of professionalism on the podcast, but I think that suggests that we're done here.
We are, honey.
Okay.
Well, you watch that, and the thing we should explain to viewers is what happens is after Phil has his full and busy professional day and all that, is he sits down, he manages to make it through about 20 minutes of a movie and falls asleep on the couch.
Exactly.
Which is why when he's like, here is the What I Watch segment, it's 3 minutes long, it's about one movie.
Yeah. Yeah. I also want to keep it short. I could go on and on.
Yeah, but let's not. We've already taxed your patience for 55 minutes. It is summer. Again, trailers are picking up. The Black Panther trailer dropped, and I look forward to discussing that during our next sortie.
That's one of us.
Yes.
So, until then.
This podcast is going to turn into an ugly, ugly discourse on how we have nothing in common movie-wise anymore.
Yes, it's a regular
who TiVos with Virginia Woolf. Yes.
You deleted my recordings, Martha.
You hadn't watched the season pass. 8 episodes have piled up and they were all in HD. And on that note, I was Lisa Schmeiser.
You were Lisa Schmeiser, and I am Philip Michaels.
All right. Thanks for listening.
Yes.